Between Riverside and Crazy is a New York City play about issues that touch our urban hearts, like race, family, and real estate. And it explores the questions of who can we trust, where can we hide, and how much are we willing to pay to continue to live here. At the center is Walter Washington, or Pops, an ex-cop with a lawsuit pending against the NYPD, and living in his well-located, still rent-controlled apartment are a group of marginally functional drinkers, ex-drinkers, relatives, and friends. In a rave review in today's New York Times, Ben Brantley calls it a dizzying and exciting place to be. This production of the Atlantic Theater Company is playing at the Linda Gross Theater at 336 West 20th Street until August 16th. And joining us now are playwright Stephen Adley Gierges, director Austin Pendleton, and Stephen McKinley Henderson, who plays Pops. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And since we have two Stephens here, is it okay if, for the sake of clarity, I address you as Stephen Adley and Stephen McKinley?
Sounds good.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Or just McKinley.
Is that what people call you?
No, when I'm with him. I call him McKinley.
Uh-huh. And you call him?
I just call him sir.
Because he gives you all the words to say.
No.
This play is an acting tour de force, not just for you, Stephen McKinley, but also every actor in the play and every scene. Austin, do you think that's due at least in part to the fact that both you and Stephen Adley began as actors?
Well, could be. These parts are extraordinarily actable. But a lot of comparatively few playwrights who write roles as actable as this have not always been actors, like Chekhov or Tennessee Williams or people like that who write with this kind of richness. So it doesn't hurt that Stephen Adley is still probably a splendid actor.
And you also like working with actors as directors. Many of your productions, the earlier productions, were directed by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah. And he's here every day, especially in this process.
I mean, in your head?
And I think he's in all our heads and all our hearts. And I think it's as Austin said, it's not going to end, but that's also a good thing.
Mm. I'm going to call you McKinley. What the heck?
All right. Yeah.
You've been a fixture in the theater scene for a while now. I saw you recently in a smaller part in Raisin in the Sun. Mm. Is this the first time you've been a leading man?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I'm a leading man. I'm a principal in the play.
You're the leading man.
I've done that, you know, in regional theater. First time in New York, but I've done quite many years in regional theater, and I was in a company in St. Louis for many years, and I worked at the Studio Arena in Buffalo for many years. I worked at the Denver Center, and I have, been a principal in the show.
Well, there's hardly a scene in this play where you're off stage. Does that put a lot of pressure on you? Without a good Pops, this play can't work.
Well, you know, it grew so organically that it sort of snuck up on me that I was in every scene. I mean, I didn't realize that.
When you say grew organically, didn't you have a script that you were working from the start?
But I mean, we workshopped for, I think the first time we read anything from it was about 15 pages in January of 2012 or something like that, you know, at the lab. And then when Atlantic took it on, they were very, very wonderful about having readings throughout this past year. And so it really did grow in increments, you know.
So every time he saw the script again, they're like, oh, there's another scene.
And yet this play is longer than the Dash with a Hat. This one is 2 hours or so. Mother with a Hat was 90 minutes without an intermission. But The Last Days of Judas Iscariot was almost 3 hours long.
Hey, you know what? Steve was in that.
Yes.
And in the first few previews, it was running like 3:45. So the fact that we got it to 2.5, we felt was a supreme accomplishment. Indeed. But I would say with this play, it's 2 hours with a 15 to 18 minute intermission. Yeah. So we move at a pace.
So is it important to cut things down to keep it tight?
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Because this play snaps right along.
Well, thank you. You know, I think you take something and then you try to remove what's not supposed to be there and subtly amplify with, you know, the help of the director and the actors and what you see, what's supposed to be there. So, and it's never perfect. It's never done.
Well, as you said, you worked with McKinley before. Mm. Did you write this play with him in mind?
I did, you know, but what I said to someone the other day is you don't have to write for Steve. You just have to write because he's, you know, 50-year pro. And on top of that, he's lived many different lives. And on top of that, he's just, you know, he's a real deal. So he's not like Pops. You know, I don't know, maybe after he's had, like, way too many drinks, or maybe when there's some time in his life, he's... But yes, I wrote it, and I just, you know, I love him very much as a person, and that made it easy for me to explore the character, and we had a good bond.
Yes, indeed.
Actors often rely a lot on body movement, but you're constrained, you're in a wheelchair for much of the play. You're in a bed for another part of the play. Does that affect the way you approach performing?
Well, it's the given circumstances. I mean, you know, you act from where you find yourself, and I rather enjoy it actually. I mean, I get to eat pie and drink and
you're not drinking alcohol.
Very nice women and no, I'm not really drinking alcohol, but I mean it's a joyous role to play actually. I mean it really is, and it flows so comfortably, and there are beautiful rests because there's such a great cast around me that, you know, and they get to do their thing. So it's over when you're on stage all the time. It really goes by, you know. So
in Ben Brantley's review, he said that your engagement, I don't know what other word to use, with the church lady may be the sexiest scene in a New York stage this summer. Have you done many other sex scenes over the course of your 50-year career?
On stage, you mean? No. Not very many on stage. Not very many, no.
Austin, was the revolving set that gives the audience a sense of just how spacious this rent-controlled apartment in Riverside Drive is, was that in the script?
No.
This is something that, who developed? You?
Well, I went to Chicago and met with Walt Spangler, who designed it. And he and I have worked together a few times in the last few years, either here in New York or in Chicago at Steppenwolf. And the way I found it productive to work for him is to talk about the play. Not to say we got to do this or we got to do that, but to talk about the play. And we talked about this, how this apartment is a magic place. I mean, it that the loss of it would be the loss of something magical to everyone who passes through it, certainly everyone who lives there and has lived there. And so Walt comes up with this revolve. And there are technical problems. If you had a unit set with all the rooms in the same place for the whole evening and always completely visible, as some plays do, first of all, every scene would have to play just in that little part of the stage, wherever the room was set. And secondly, you wouldn't have the idea of this world mm-hmm. as much. And so, but anyway, I say that after the fact because we had this talk in a bar in Chicago, and then Walt comes up with his idea.
And Stephen Adley, mm-hmm. when somebody has come up mm-hmm. with an idea like that, do you feel that's why I like to collaborate with other people?
Oh, yeah. No, it's amazing. Every time I write a play, I'm always threatening to myself, like, mm-hmm. I'm going to write a play where it says, you know, the actors just act in cubes and everyone wears black T-shirts. But no, it's what's amazing is that Walter never visited my house and he evoked it. And there is some magical element.
But you have a rent-controlled apartment in Riverside Drive?
yeah, they're trying to get me out. But I still.
Oh, so that became part of the plot. This is an autobiographical play on some level.
It's a little bit.
You have a great ear for dialogue, and I've read that you started developing it in kindergarten.
Kindergarten? I don't know if it was in kindergarten. I just know that I went to kindergarten and grammar school up in Harlem, and I lived on the Upper West Side, and I was always revolving between two worlds. And where I lived, we didn't make as much money as the people who lived there. And then where I went to school was a lot of people that was different than me. So I think I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to fit in. So I did a lot of listening. And, you know, if I could say it right or do it right, then I could fit in. And I think maybe that's where the ear came from.
So being raised in New York with all of its diverse cultures has been an inspiration for you.
Absolutely. Where else are you going to live? You know? Yeah. It's a blessing.
My guests are playwright Stephen Adley Gierges, Stephen McKinley Henderson, who stars in Stephen Adley's latest play, Between Riverside and Crazy, and Austin Pendleton, who directed it. It is currently at the Linda Gross Theater at 336 West 20th Street, and unfortunately with a limited run just till August 16th. Oh, it's been extended, I gather,
to
the 23rd. Okay. McKinley, you've appeared in a number of August Wilson plays. You were the Associate Artistic Director, in fact, for WNYC's audio recordings in August Wilson's Century Cycle. He was also a master of colloquial dialogue, and you've been quoted as saying that you enjoy being part of an ensemble, which is also something that Wilson did. But in this play, your role is kind of dominant, but do you see it as an ensemble play?
I see them all as ensemble plays, you know. I mean, it's such a joy to be a part of a group of artists who are all called together to, you know, accomplish this one major task. And I always think of it as an ensemble. I was trained to be a member of a company. I was, you know, so that was my background and training. You know?
And I assume that's something that, Austin, you have in mind when you're directing a play like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did a thing with this play. I said to Stephen Adley, cast it. Because I saw a lot of those early productions that Phil directed, and then I saw Anna Shapiro's production of The Mother, et cetera, with the hat in Chicago at Steppenwolf after she'd done it on Broadway. And every time I saw one of his plays directed by one of the primary directors of his plays, the acting was wonderful. So I thought, Stephen Adley, he knows his actors. He knows the actors who know his voice.
But he's also giving them the kind of lines to say that actors must just love.
I would think so.
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely
right. Yeah. And so I just, didn't I say something like, cast it and then I'll show up the first day of rehearsal?
I was really happy because I kind of had a cast in my head. Mm-hmm. But for a director to do that, it's a tremendous act of faith, and I'm just glad it worked out. And I just also would mention that so many of us, the actors and me, have worked together before, and there's so many connections, you know. And I hadn't worked with Austin before, but Austin had mentored Phil when Phil was first starting, and then I saw Austin in a Lyle Kessler reading, and I was like, this guy's such a great actor, and I was like, wow, he reminds me of someone. And then I just sat there and I realized I saw Phil in him, you know, and I said, okay, Phil took something from Austin and went, you know, and made it his own, but it just felt really right. And we have hopefully a good play, but I feel like we have a strong family doing a family play.
At first, Pops comes across as a likable curmudgeon, but as the play progresses, we see his darker side. Do you think most people operate in the gray, whatever they tell themselves?
I think so.
You still have to make your character sympathetic.
Yeah, well, I think that's the whole trick. The more you can give the audience a reason to care about the character, whether it's circumstances or just that they're funny, the more you're allowed to shove troubling aspects, you know, down the throat. And hopefully we see ourselves in some degree, whether it's metaphorically or literally, in the piece.
The most sympathetic thing about a person is their flaws, or their flaws. You know, I mean, that's the thing that we can say, I understand, because that person's human, you know. So,
well, you have your job to some degree is keeping the audience from turning against you as more and more of the truth is revealed.
Well, you know, that perhaps that's so, and but again, you know, people say that Stephen is very good with this kind of dialogue thing. Man, he's crafted this thing within an inch of its life. It's not just something that rolls off of someone, you know. I mean, he's really, and he's watched and he's made sure that there is a balance, and so it helps. But taking in the other actor, I think in the Atlantic Theater, the space is just fabulous, first of all. The people can really see what you are taking in, not just what you're giving off, but what you're also taking in. And a lot of times I think the understanding and the empathy for a character comes from when they understand what you're taking in from other people, you know.
Well, one of the aspects of this play, and I think an aspect of pretty much all of Stephen Adley Gidges' plays, is that we feel like we're being set up for something to happen, then it doesn't happen, something totally different happens.
That's life. That's really, yeah, you know. Right.
now, Stephen Adley, you grew up Catholic, and one of your plays was set in a portion of purgatory called Hope. Mm. Does this place take place in basically the same spot?
You know, I when my mother died, I moved in with my father the night my mother died and stayed there till he died 4 years later. And it was, in some ways, a kind of purgatory, but it was also, you know, everybody that has older parents, you know, it was also, I will remember it as the best thing I've ever done in my life. So I think in the world of the play, there's a part where Stephen's character says that his son is living here in Shangri-La, and the son's like, I'm in hell, you know, and both can be true at the same time.
Well, we all want that apartment.
Yeah,
or at least most New Yorkers.
Someone's
going to
get it real soon.
Now, Austin, you've directed Chekhov. Do you think that rent control apartments on Riverside Drive is kind of like the gun in a Chekhov play? It appears in the first act. It's got to go off by the third.
Well, it's like the cherry orchard. Mm. I mean, that place isn't rent controlled, but it's about to fall. And it's the people are unable to stop that happening. Here, at least, they forestall it. But the loss of a place that so many powerful things have happened to you in, that's grammatically a nightmare what I just said.
Well, you're not the playwright, you're the director.
Yeah, right.
But he also
God.
Is a playwright.
Yeah, well, and you're an actor. In fact, aren't you going to be in a new play by Young Gene Lee?
Yeah.
Straight White Men.
That's right.
Coming up or later this year?
Yeah, in November, yeah.
So do you like going back and forth between the three things?
It's not a philosophy. It's what comes along. You know what I mean? You know, I don't have I like being able to do all those things, but it's what the next really interesting thing that comes along.
Would McKinley, would you want to direct? Have you directed?
Well, I did direct at the Signature when we did the Negro Ensemble season that Ruben Santiago was artistic director of. You know what, the plays come along that I think perhaps won't get done wherever I am unless I do. I did the Gruesome Playground Injuries. I think I love that play.
Oh, wow.
I did that up in Buffalo, and I directed a play about the life of Muhammad Ali that went to the Olympic Arts Festival and in London and so on and so forth. But they're just, you know, there's great years apart between projects that I do, but sometimes I'm just moved to do it. Yeah.
And Stephen Adley, can you imagine ever directing one of your own plays?
Sometimes I've contemplated it, but the truth is that if you have a great director, which I have with Austin, had with Anna, certainly had with Phil, they're going to bring something to the party that I didn't know was needed. And all of them give me leeway to speak and fight and do what we got to do.
Much of your work has been performed originally as part of the Atlantic Theater Company's projects. Are you connected to them other than somebody who supplies them with great work?
No, because actually I think maybe you meant Labyrinth Theater Company, because that's where all my stuff has gone. This is the first time I've done something at the Atlantic, and it really came out of Neil Pepe just calling and saying, do you have anything? And I said, well, I have 15 pages, but it comes with three actors that have to be in it. And he said, let's go for the ride. And so we did, and it was been amazing. It's a great institution.
And now it's been extended until August 23rd. Could it go any longer? Well, because with the review in today's Times, I suspect a lot of people are going to be lining up to buy tickets.
I guess we'll see. We'll see what happens, but it certainly doesn't hurt to have acknowledgement of positive
news. Yeah, I kind of am excited about another play that Stephen is working on, so I hope it helps that happen, actually.
I started another play, but I finished this one first. I wanted to do two with Steve, with McKinley. And this one got done first, but there's another one.
My great thanks to playwright Stephen Adley Gurgis, Stephen McKinley Henderson, fabulous actor, and the wonderful writer, director, actor Austin Pendleton for being on our show today. The play is Between Riverside and Crazy.